20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's up, friends? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Just got back from family night. Really fun night of football. Anytime that you get to be at Lambeau Field, it's a good night. And it was just awesome to see all of the fans, all of the families. Obviously, some really fun performances from the players that we'll go over in just a moment. But it's just one of those rites of summer that just is awesome every single time. And it's not always the most insanely, you know, crazy practice with all these unbelievable takeaways, but it just is fun. It's enjoyable. The weather was gorgeous. I know in the past we've had a lot of family nights that have had some lightning and rain and everything. It was a perfect night, fireworks after. Just one of those things that I always enjoy every single time that I'm able to get to it. And quite frankly, every single time I'm at Lambeau Field for any event, period, bar none, end of story. But we'll go over everything that took place. Before we get there, quick shout out to Cat in Suit for becoming a brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube member. Appreciate you a ton. If you have yet to check out those memberships, make sure to do so. And of course, like, subscribe, comment, give those 5-star reviews. Those always help a ton. And we want to start off as well by going over our Luigi's Pizza Player of the Night. And I'm going to go with maybe one that if you were watching from home or maybe even following the tweets, you may not have heard a ton about, but I'm going Rashawn Gary on this one. And I think sometimes there's a propensity for when players continue to do well over and over and over and over again, that it just becomes, you know, second nature. It becomes out of mind. It kind of becomes almost boring at times. It shouldn't. What Rashawn Gary is doing right now is massively impressive. I don't care if it's against Kadeem Telfort or Andre Dillard or Caleb Jones. I do not care. These are NFL players, and right now he is taking them to task every single practice. And in family night, 2 more sacks and a massive tackle for loss. Had one where he got around the edge easily. Had another one where Jordan Love tried to step up and Gary was having no part of it whatsoever. Easy sack there again. And then again, just burst through the line. Easy tackle for loss on a play that, again, was not just your normal, like he met him a yard behind the line of scrimmage. No, this was 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage. He is taking names. He is absolutely dominating. Pads on, pads off, family night, random practice. It doesn't matter. That's the type of training camp that he has been having. We'll see if he can obviously carry that over into the season. My expectation is that he will. Yes, he's going to see better tackles against the Eagles, Jordan Mailata, Lane Johnson, all those guys. And it's going to continue through the course of the season. But Rashawn is having an awesome start, middle, all of it for training camp so far. So he is my Luigi's Pizza Player of the Night. If you have yet to try a Luigi's Frozen Pizza, you absolutely need to do so. You can find them in Wisconsin, Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, Michigan, Illinois. Make sure to follow them on Twitter, of course, as well, at Luigi's Pizza. That's L-U-I-G-E-S Pizza. And tell them, of course, that you want a Pack-A-Day pizza and tell them what toppings should be on it as well. I appreciate them a ton for taking the time to sponsor the Pack-A-Day podcast. They are officially a part of the Pack-A-Day family. We are officially a part of the Luigi's Frozen Pizza family. So make sure that when you are getting your family pizzas, you are stocking up on Luigi's Frozen Pizza. One other thing I'll just add really quick as well. It has been really cool to see people that have been tweeting out and putting in the comments about how they've tried Luigi's Frozen Pizza for the first time since the sponsorship has taken place, and they are absolutely loving it. So like I said, make sure to check it out and stock your freezer with them, because I know I am doing it every single time I'm at my grocery store. All right, let's get to the rest of practice. Couple injury updates. Josh Myers back from his personal days off. I'm not sure if they will continue or hopefully it's just done now, but he was back at family night. Josh Jacobs was dressed, did do all the warmups, did do all the individual stuff, did some kick return stuff, prior to basically the start of practice. But once practice started, Jacobs did not do any teamwork or anything like that. So clearly he's not far away. Clearly, you know, it seems like if there was an actual game tonight that he would have participated, but Green Bay just being cautious with him, understandably so, but it looks like he's going to be back. And like I said, he did do some individual work and was dressed for the night, just didn't do any team stuff. And then the new injury, Kingsley Enagbare out with a hamstring injury. They're starting to pile up a little bit more. Carrington Valentine, hamstring. Kingsley Enagbare, hamstring. Don Callis, hamstring. I know we don't like the H word. We hate the H word. Unfortunately, this is not Madden. You cannot turn off injuries. Like I joked about the other day, you've got 91 guys in camp. That's 182 hamstrings. Right now, three of them are not great. Hopefully that means, you know, we don't know, I guess, the extent of Don Callis's or of of Kingsley Enagbare's either. We know that Valentine's probably not going to be back anytime in the near future. They're being extra cautious with him and they're going to remain cautious with him. But, you know, these things can linger. We know that. We don't want to see it. We hate to see it. And we know they did a full new training regimen and a new strength and conditioning staff. They're warming up differently. And you want to see the return on investment here. Listen, every team's going to have some hamstring injuries. It's just part of doing business in the NFL. But I know we hate to see it. And hopefully this is the end of it now. We don't have to see any more of them. And hopefully Enagbare and Callis and Valentine are back before we know it. But as of right now, those three do continue to deal with these hamstring injuries that Green Bay has seemingly fought through forever. And like I said, it's not super uncommon throughout the course of the NFL. So your total players that did not practice for the day: Kingsley Enagbare, Donovan Jennings, Keyshawn Banks, Deslin Alexander, Edgerrin Cooper, Don Callis, Tucker Kraft, and Carrington Valentine. So 8 in total. Not a ton, but enough certainly in some key ones there that you want these guys back sooner rather than later. We're just going to have to kind of keep tabs on the injuries as we go forward. They're seemingly, knock on wood, fingers crossed, were not any apparent injuries at practice. There was one collision for Christian Watson with Evan Williams a little bit that Watson stayed down for a millisecond after, but got back up pretty quick, waved it off, and then eventually did go back into practice. So it seemed, at least on the surface, as we were watching, there were no injuries that were noticeable, but we'll see what the next practice on Tuesday brings and if there's any new injuries from this longer family night practice. Some good news on the injury front, though. Per Matt LaFleur, Zach Tom should resume team activities on Tuesday. So he's only been doing individual work up until this point. That will be a huge boost for the offense, getting him back at right tackle in the teamwork. And then Tucker Kraft should be returning to practice this week as well, per Matt LaFleur. I would expect a similar Zach Tom-esque ramp-up period for probably about 2 to 3 weeks for Tucker before they allow him to start doing some teamwork and then kind of go from there. But it's still going to be great to see Tucker Kraft back at practice at all, and it's going to be great to see Zach Tom in team activities. All right, your starters for the night at family night: Jordan Love at quarterback, A.J. Dillon at running back, Romeo Doubs, Jaden Reed, and Christian Watson at wide receiver, Luke Musgrave at tight end, Rashid Walker at left tackle, Elton Jenkins at left guard, Josh Myers at center, Jordan Morgan at right guard, Andre Dillard at right tackle. They seem to continue to rotate those players at right tackle. It was Dillard getting the start. We also saw a couple other guys there, including Kadeem Telfort, and Caleb Jones got some reps with the ones at right tackle as well. Preston Smith and Rashawn Gary at defensive ends, Kenny Clark and TJ Slayton at defensive tackle, Isaiah McDuffie and Quay Walker as your linebackers and nickel, Stokes, Nixon, and Jair at corners, Bullard and McKinney at safety. It was Bullard who got the nod over Evan Williams and Anthony Johnson Jr. for that starting safety spot for the day. Let's talk about Jordan Love first of all. Some good for Jordan Love, some not so good for Jordan Love. I'll start by saying once again, I believe the deep ball continues to look really, really sharp. And that is still one of my biggest takeaways from the entirety of training camp so far, because that can be such a weapon for this Packers offense. They have guys that can win down the field. We saw that last year, and there were times that Jordan just could not connect on it. Right now, he is connecting at it at a much higher level. We saw it in team, we saw it in one-on-ones, and right now he is throwing a beautiful deep ball, and that is a huge step for Jordan Love. And again, I can't state it enough how important that is for his progression and this offense's progression in 2024. Let's go through some of the less great plays, and then we'll go through some of the really good stuff that he had as well. Early on in practice, Love had a throw along the sidelines. It was a third down, tried to connect to Romeo Doubs. Eric Stokes made a great play on the ball, jumped it well, broke up the pass. Probably a bit too risky on that play for Jordan. I think Stokes had a good enough jump that if he trusts it probably a little bit more and isn't maybe afraid of like a double move, I think he probably picks that off, maybe even takes it to the house. So that's one he probably wants to have back just in general. Obviously, an incomplete pass, but also potentially could have been worse than that. Had a seam ball later in practice to Christian Watson that is sort of one of your classic quote-unquote hospital balls. And if you're not familiar, a hospital ball is a ball to a wide receiver that will end, you know, them will end with them in the hospital, basically, because they're going to get a huge hit over the middle. And as I mentioned before, that was the potential injury play for Watson. He was fine. He got back up. He finished practice. So, you know, some harm, no foul, I guess. But for that sort of play, these are always interesting ones to break down. The ball from Love to Watson was beautiful. It was absolutely perfect. Hit Watson in the hands. However, it's one of those, it is eerily reminiscent of the play that they hit in practice the other day, which was perfect and beat the safeties there, threw right past the linebacker and completed the ball to Watson. This one, almost identical, hits Watson in the hands. Tyron Hopper had the great coverage on this one as the linebacker, but the safeties were a little bit closer on this one. Evan Williams was able to break a little bit, quicker on it. And Evan Williams and Watson, Williams is going for basically the ball on the play. They end up colliding and it ends up being an incomplete pass. Like I said, Watson stayed down for a little bit, got back up. But in a game, those are dangerous plays for your wide receiver. Even in a practice where there's no hitting, there was still a big enough collision there that Watson stayed down for a second. So from a decision-making standpoint, certainly I would say a decision that Jordan probably doesn't want to make in that situation. From a throw standpoint, again, the throw was beautiful. And, you know, he did technically give Christian Watson an opportunity to come down with that ball. Based on the collision, I'm certainly not faulting Christian on that one. You can say that's part of the job description. You need to come up with that ball, but those are certainly tough ones, especially when it's a bang-bang collision, especially probably in a practice where you're not maybe expecting that sort of collision. That maybe could have played into it a little bit as well, but just an interesting one there to kind of break down for Jordan. And then he had two plays to Javon Bullard that could have been picks. One that I think he threw so hard and Bullard, I think, just got his hands up a little bit late. Maybe wasn't expecting Jordan to actually throw it in that situation. But that ends up just as a deflected pass. And then another one that he jumped later that he had an opportunity to pick off as well and just couldn't come down with it. Probably just a couple plays where, again, Jordan would have liked to have had back. I don't know how much of this is Jordan just sort of testing the limits of his powers. Like, listen, he had a phenomenal end of last year. He's not the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. I'm sure there's a little bit of Jordan of like, what can I get away with? And in practice and in these sort of situations, if I were the coach, I would encourage some of that. Now in games, you want to tone that down. You want to make sure that number one is still not turning over the ball, but I don't necessarily hate the fact that he's, you know, sort of trying to see what he can do. But in these, especially the Bullard plays, to me, it was less of what he could do and not seeing Bullard on the play, I should say. So I think those were a couple plays he'd like to have back. And then the 2-minute drive at the end, which is always sort of like the grand finale. They usually end practice with it. It's the 2-minute drive, offense versus defense. It ended up being a situation where they went 4 and out and couldn't get anything going. So a clear win for the defense. Jordan couldn't get anything going on offense for any of the 2-minute drive. I know he didn't complete a pass. Actually, I take that back. He completed the last pass to Musgrave, which was a 4th and 10 where he had to just throw it in the flat and hope Musgrave could do something, which is even harder in basically 2-hand touch football. He's not going to break any tackles in that situation. And it ends up being a 4 and out for the offense. And in that situation, they were down by 3. They lost. So those are things Jordan would have liked to have had back. Some really, really good stuff too. From Jordan. He had multiple plays where he hit receivers in stride. Jaden Reed had one on a key play in a situation where they needed to pick up a couple first downs. And then he had one to Watson early in practice as well. He had Ben Seams up the seam on a big play. Unfortunately, it bounced off of Sims' hands. Is maybe a tick high, but one that even Ben Sims said after that he should have had. And I agree. I think Ben Sims should have had that one. I thought it overall was a solid throw. Ended up being a drop. He had an awesome throw to Romeo Doubs with Jair in coverage. Doubs boxes him out. If you watch the throw, there's a video out there that you can find that you can see exactly what Love's looking at. Doubs breaks, again, boxes Jair out, comes up with it, but it was a really nice throw from Love on that particular one. He had a gorgeous play action fake to get around. Gary bit on it hard. And then you've got Dontavian Wicks just running with easy separation. He hits Wicks in stride on that play. Had Love to Romeo Doubs for a touchdown in red zone between Eric Stokes and Evan Williams. Had Love to Doubs on a fade for a touchdown in the red zone over Keyshawn Nixon. It was funny on that one. Dobbs like jumped a half tick early and it just didn't matter because he hung in the air for forever and just still went up over Nixon and went and got the ball. And then also connected with Romeo Doubs on a deep crosser down the field in rhythm as well. Also had some really nice throws in the one-on-one period. So a lot of stuff that Jordan did very well, a handful of things that he would have liked to have probably had back, but that's sort of the life of a quarterback in these style practices. He continues overall to, I think, look very good. Just some throws that he still probably needs to clean up a little bit, and he will as the remainder of practice goes on. We mentioned Romeo Doubs quite a bit in that breakdown of Jordan Love. He had a really nice night again, and it's had a really great week to practice. As I mentioned, he had a slant versus Eric Stokes, and before Evan Williams could get there, that would have been a touchdown in the red zone. We just talked about that red zone fade that he went up. It's so funny. He literally jumped probably like a full second early and still had the ability to hang in the air and go up and basically moss Keyshawn Nixon on the play. Really fun stuff from Romeo on that one. I mean, you could argue he should have jumped and timed it a little bit better, but kind of almost more cool in the fact that he didn't and still just had the raw athletic ability to go up and get it and come down with the touchdown in the back of the end zone. Had that very tough contested catch versus Jair where he just out-physicaled him and out, you know, basically boxed him out. And then had that really nice deep crosser as well, where he ran a perfect route and it was in team activities and he came wide open and Love hit him with ease on that one. So really great week from Romeo Doubs, and he continued to do that at family night and had a really big night overall. All right, next one I want to talk about is Jordan Morgan. This is what Larry McCarron, thank you to Zach Cruz for posting this, by the way. This is what Larry McCarron said about Jordan Morgan. He said, I'll just read Zach's tweet. Quote, Larry McCarron is very high on first round pick Jordan Morgan. Said he'll dominate people once he gets the technique down, but he's still getting it done in 11 on 11s and one on ones because he's so good and athletic. Doesn't look the part of a rookie. A lot of God-given ability. I watched a decent amount of Jordan in this practice because, quite frankly, this was really the first time that we had the ability to have a good vantage point of the offensive line. In practice, we're on ground level, and you can just kind of see the tackle that's on this side, and it's really sort of hard to gauge. And you can sometimes go a little bit in one direction to see them a little bit better, but even still, ground level, a lot of guys in front of you, it's tough to really glean a lot of times exactly what's going on in the trenches. In the press box, we had a much better view of it, so I tried to watch a little bit more of the offensive line, and in particular, Jordan Morgan. I thought he had a really nice practice. Had a couple of really nice reps against Kenny Clark, a couple of really nice reps versus Devontae Wyatt. Slayton did get the better of him on one run play where Slayton basically just stacked him, set the line of scrimmage. Jordan Morgan could not get any movement on him whatsoever. Running, I think it was Dylan, tried to cut back and there was just nothing doing. And big man TJ Slayton just basically ate up the entire play. That's a tough one for Morgan. You're not going to move TJ Slayton too often in that situation, but Slayton got the better of him there. But you can tell he has made a really big jump from OTAs and mini camps up until training camp. And those are always fun to see. You can see it starting to, I'm not going to say like completely slow down for him, but slow down so much more than where he was at earlier in the offseason. I do believe they put too much on his plate. Left tackle, left guard, right tackle early in the offseason. And now he's settled into right guard. I love him at right guard. And I liked what I saw in this practice. I'm not quite there, but I would say 90%, 85% chance Jordan Morgan starts at right guard on week one, assuming no injuries. I think he's just going to win that battle with Sean Ryan. And they're already starting to put like Sean Ryan in some, you know, left guard, center, right guard, meaning he's probably going to be the first guy up on game day on the interior of the offensive line. And they'll have to figure out what they do at tackle. Should someone go down? Do they want to kick somebody out? Do they just want to have it be whoever the swing tackle ends up being? That is sort of more of in question, but it really, really feels like it is going to be Walker, Jenkins, Myers, Morgan, and Tom as your starting offensive line, with Sean Ryan probably being the first guy off the bench, especially on the interior, and then a few more question marks after that. But I like what I'm seeing out of Jordan Morgan already, and I agree with Larry McCarron too. You can tell the technique isn't quite there yet, but his movement skills are so good, his feet are quick, his hands are quick, and he's only going to continue to get better. There's a little bit here, and I'm not comparing him completely apples to apples or saying he's going to grow into this type of player. There's a little bit of Zach Tom here. You know, if you remember Zach Thomas' rookie year, there were some struggles early on. And that part of it, I think, is because he was playing at guard and they were moving him to a variety of different spots. And it kind of took some time to figure out exactly where Tom should play. And then he settled into one spot. And now he's just a really great right tackle. And it kind of feels like Jordan Morgan to some extent. Now, not in game time yet, but it was going through a similar thing where he kind of got moved around a bunch at the beginning, wasn't sure. They set him at one spot. And there's a lot of technique work that still needs to get done. But just like Zach Tom early on had the great agility, the great footwork, and was still sort of learning the position, but he was still good at the time and only continued to get better. I've seen a little of that from Morgan as well, where he's got the footwork and the agility. He's got the athleticism. Now he's picking up the position more. He's focusing on one particular position, and you are seeing improved play from Jordan Morgan. Like I said, he's going to be, in my opinion, the starter day one at right guard. And I'll add on top of that as well by just saying it does feel like the offensive line overall has improved. It would be hard not to. In early training camp, the defensive line was just wrecking shop, and they were completely dominant against the Packers' offensive line. Once the pads got on, it did slow down a little bit, and I think even over these last few practices, you're seeing Jordan with more time and Sean Clifford with more time. You're not seeing these jailbreaks from the defensive line anymore where it's just immediate pressure, at least not as often. Yeah, you're still getting Rashawn Gary with a couple sacks, right, against the backup right tackles, and you're still seeing some pressures here and there. LVN had another one that we'll talk about, and I think Aaron Mosby had one, but overall, I think this offensive line's doing a whole heck of a lot better, and you're seeing the offense start to get in a much better rhythm because of it. I want to talk about a couple of rookies next. The first one is Javon Bullard. We talked about him in the Jordan Love breakdown where he had two plays where he potentially, could have had picks and jumped routes. And you just love seeing the way that Bullard plays. I'll take it back actually a little bit. One play he jumped and it again deflected off his fingertips and ended up incomplete. The other play, he had a great reaction to a throw to Jaden Reed from Jordan Love. And on that particular play, broke on it in like a millisecond and then broke up the play. And then as he was falling down, almost picked off that one. And like it ended up, falling incomplete or whatever. But what's really been impressive is his closing ability. It happens in an instant. Now for me, he did get, just to be clear, he got some time in the slot and he also got some time at safety. I continue to believe that he is a safety. Do I think he can play some slot, some big slot and some things like that from time to time? I do, but I like him a lot more as a true safety than I do in the slot. And if you've noticed, as we sort of track some of these things out on, at least on Twitter, he hasn't been great in the individual coverage matchups in one-on-ones. I think that's probably one thing that Bullard can continue to work on. He gets a little bit grabby at times, and just his overall coverage technique in those situations could use a little bit of work. And that's why for me, as a pure coverage guy in the slot, unless you're just playing zone with him only, I think there's some question marks. But as a true safety and everything you're asking him to do there and his close on the ball, it has been super, super impressive. Now, I will say that play against Jaden Reed was him in the slot breaking on it, making a huge play and almost coming down with a pick. So there's still some upside there. I just, again, personally like him a little bit more as a safety. But the speed and the closing ability is readily apparent. And I do think he will continue to get some looks in the big slot as well. So really nice day. Really, really nice day for Javon Bullard. And that's what you want to see, right? And we've sort of seen it. When Anthony Johnson Jr. has gotten his opportunities to start, he has made the most of them. When Evan Williams has got the opportunities to start, he has made the most of them. And now Javon Bullard gets the opportunity, family night in front of everyone, and he responded, had a really big night overall. Could have been even bigger if he maybe came up with a couple of those interceptions. One of them, I think, was probably a better chance than the other, but still, really, really nice night from Javon Bullard. The other one, Kalen King, had a pass breakup, actually two pass breakups in coverage. And it's funny, me and Mike Spofford tweeted almost the exact same thing at the exact same time. Kalen King just scraps and fights for everything. Nothing is easy against him. And I love that mentality, especially for somebody who has been playing a little bit in the slot. Like, he has the right mentality to play in the slot. He can blitz, he can cover, and then he has the ability to play run defense as well. I like him as a backup to Keyshawn Nixon in that role. And I think it suits him well. And we'll see if kind of over time, if that is what he ends up being as the backup nickel. Like I said, Javon Bullard's getting some time there as well. But this was a nice night. And he ended one of the team periods as well speaking of blitzing off the edge, he blitzes off the edge. And it's really funny because, of course, you know, Kalen King can't sack the quarterback. So Clifford never sees him. He's rolling right. So Kalen King just sprints past him and like is running just side by side with him. That's a really funny play because, again, he can't do anything. Like, you can't sack him. You can't knock the ball away. You can't touch any, you know, he's wearing the red jersey, right? So instead of doing anything else, and again, Clifford is completely unknown that King's coming from behind. He just does a nice little jog right next to him. And it's funny because you could see like Clifford, like all of a sudden, like notice somebody, and then all of a sudden he realized it and he just kind of stops the play. But it was really funny. Really, really nice day from Kalen King, contesting everything, two pass breakups and a big sack to end a team period. Let's go over the kicking battle. This is a really sort of interesting conversation here. So I had Greg Joseph going 8-for-10 on the night, Anders Carlson going 9-for-10 on the night. And from here on out, you're probably going to get different numbers from different Packers writers for a couple reasons. The first one is prior to the start of family night, before it like officially kicked off, they had two extra points that they had each of them attempt. Joseph had one, Carlson had one. It was basically, again, before it started, they still had everyone lined up. It wasn't just like individual kicking. They had the full kick, you know, kick team and kick block team lined up. They did everything. And both Carlson and Joseph made those. Now, I think some of the writers maybe did not include that in their count for both of those guys. I did. And I kind of view it as if you've had the opportunity to kick, and it was any sort of, you know, period where they clearly did kicking, I write it down as an opportunity. Because we're not keeping stats here for record books. If it was like a record book of like, all right, how did they do? Maybe we judge these a little different. It was like kind of pre-practice, or we'll get to the other situation in just a moment. But for me, it was an opportunity. What we're gauging is how many kicks these guys made and missed in the scheme of training camp to see who should make the team, to see who kicked better. So to me, every opportunity is an opportunity. I'm going to track it. So I think some people didn't track that one. I know some people did. I tracked it. So they went 1-for-1 in that one. And then later in practice, they had a situation and they were simulating a situation where the kicker would go to kick and they would, you know, call a timeout right before he was going to kick or right before the ball was snapped. They call a timeout and then the kicker would kick it anyway. And then they would redo the play. So I know a lot of the writers actually did not count the play that they, you know, kicked for the timeout because the timeout was called. And I understand the thinking and the logic there because next week in preseason, right, if Anders goes to, you know, make a field goal and he makes it, but the opposing team calls a timeout before the ball is snapped, you know, we don't really track that one. We say like, all right, the timeout was called before, whether he made or missed was irrelevant. Now let's see what he does on the second one. So I can understand maybe not counting up, but again, for the sake of tracking these for training camp to see who makes more and makes it, you know, less, I kind of want to track everything. Now it doesn't really matter here because Carlson and Joseph both made the one that they called the timeout for. So it was equal. However, Carlson did not make the one after the timeout and Joseph did. So there was a little bit of a difference there, but I counted everything. If you don't want to, that's fine. But Greg Joseph went 8-for-10 on the night. Anders Carlson went 9-for-10 on the night. That brings Anders Carlson to 34-for-41 in the entirety of camp so far. That's an 82.9% clip. And Greg Joseph, 37-of-41 in camp so far at a 90.2% clip. But just know you may see some different numbers from different writers dependent upon how they wanted to gauge and actually track each of those. I will say I did make a mistake on the initial Anders Carlson kick where they called the timeout. From my vantage point in the press box, it looked like he missed it. They called the timeout and then there was no signal from the ref. So I went off of that. It was clear based on the tape that, or on the like video version or the TV version that he did in fact make that one. So I did correct it. But in case you saw that, I did mess it up originally. So my mistake on that. I'll add one thing here. I thought this was a very big day for Anders Carlson. Not necessarily because he went like 9-for-10 on the night, which was great, but we talked about it the other day. One thing with Anders is sometimes he can get in a little bit of a funk and just not be able to find, you know, himself. And all of a sudden it ends up being a bigger issue. And to respond with being the better kicker, going 9-for-10 at family night and making 90% of the kicks at Lambeau in a big family night atmosphere, I thought that was a huge bounce back for him. So he's now down only 3 kicks to Joseph, but it's still a fairly significant difference in percentage of kicks made with, again, Joseph being about, what, 6.5 better than what Carlson is at this point, with, again, 90.2 for Joseph, 82.9 for Anders Carlson. All right, some other miscellaneous notes. Aaron Mosby had a would-be sack during practice. As mentioned earlier, LVN had a would-be sack during practice, and he continues to have a very nice week. The screen game continues to absolutely blow. It sucks. They try to throw a tight end screen. It got blown up immediately. They've got a lot of work to do in the screen game. Couple more backfield disruptive plays from Jonathan Ford. One on a pass that still went off, but he got in the backfield pretty quick. And then he had a big tackle for loss in a team period later in practice. That was probably like a 4 or 5 yard loss. The offensive play was a little bit disjointed, but don't take away anything from Jonathan Ford, who burst into the backfield and made that tackle for loss. As mentioned earlier, Caleb Jones got some reps with the ones. That was noteworthy. A couple of really nice deep down the field. I say deep, but probably like 20 yard down the field throws from Michael Pratt. Just absolute darts, put it right on the receivers. I think one was to Hicks. Forget who, the other one maybe was to Joel Wilson. I forget who the other one was to, but one of them was definitely to Hicks. Both of those were really, really nice throws in rhythm, absolute darts. I thought Sean Clifford had a very solid night, and he finished it off by leading the 2 minute drive for the number twos all the way down the field into easy field goal range for a potential kick to tie the game. As I mentioned earlier, the ones were 4 and out, but the twos with Clifford drove all the way down the field. A really nice prolonged drive, a big completion on 4th down to Joel Wilson. Overall, I thought Clifford had a much better night. Probably, I don't know if Matt LaFleur would say it or not, but I think that was probably Clifford's best day of camp so far. Speaking of Joel Wilson, he had a couple of really nice catches, and he made his name known for a potential practice squad spot, I think. And I mentioned this a while back. I did a full breakdown of all sort of like the bottom of the roster guys that most people had never heard of before, guys that came over from like reserve future deals and things like that. Your Deslin Alexanders, your Joel Wilsons, your Ellis Merriweathers, those type of guys, right? And I really like Joel Wilson. I really liked some of the tape that I found of him, college and pros, some of the preseason stuff from previous years. I think there's something there as a developmental practice squad guy. I said at the time, reminded me a little bit of kind of like a poor man's Robert Tonyan. To be clear, not saying this is a number three tight end or somebody that you're, you know, developing into a future starter or anything like that. But I do think there's something there as a practice squad guy that if you needed to, you know, to call him up and be a number three tight end for a few games, I think he could potentially do that. He's at a nice camp, and this was certainly his biggest night. Good day to have it, actually, at family night in front of a huge crowd. And then lastly here, we had a live tackling period, which was fun. It was fun to see some live tackling. Benny Sapp had a big tackle. That's where Jonathan Ford had that big tackle for loss in the backfield. So we saw Ellis Merriweather probably had his, you know, biggest moments, a couple plays where he bounced off of some tackles. Jarvion Howard looked okay. So yeah, I thought that was a fun period, and we got to see just young guys for that period, but some actual live tackling, which was kind of fun to see. The moment of the night, all right, the moment of the night. So they did some stuff where fans and some kids got to do some different stuff. So they did a punt return drill or a competition to see how many punts you could catch. But when you caught it, you had to hold on to that ball. So Jair did it first. He caught the first one, kept it in his hand, caught the second one, kept it in his hand, and then dropped the third. And then Jaden Reed caught 6. But as he was getting ready to do the 7th, one of the balls that he had, he dropped. It fell out. So if any ball hits the ground at any time, you're out, you're done. So he caught 6, but eventually one of them hit the ground. So he was eliminated at 6. And then Keyshawn Nixon came up, and I think he caught, I don't remember. I think he caught 3 and then couldn't hang on to the 4th. I forget if it was 2 or 3 that he actually caught and then dropped it. But Jaden Reed was the winner of the competition. But then they had this kid do it. And this was what was the moment of the night. Kid comes up. I think the first kid that did it couldn't catch a punt, or maybe he caught 1 and that was, I can't remember exactly what it was. But the second kid comes up and he catches the first one. That was a cool moment in and of itself. You caught this ball out of the jugs machine at Lambeau. Awesome moment. Then he does the same thing. He holds on to the first one, and then they kick him another one, and he catches the second one. So like that was a cool moment, right? Like you're like, all right, the kid caught 2 balls holding the first one. That was awesome. Remember, Jair only caught 2 and then dropped the third. They punt the third one, and like he's having like a hard enough time just like hanging on to the 2 balls to get to the spot. He catches the third. He catches three of them. He did better than Jair did. And here's the cool part. The crowd goes crazy. The entire sideline erupts and they surround the kid and are all like jumping around him and celebrating with him. Just one of those really cool family night moments. That kid will remember that forever. He got interviewed by John Kuhn after. Just perfect. Just absolutely perfect. That's the stuff that you want to see at family night. And that's the stuff where like the fans and the kids and the team, and like, this is one team owned by the fans, you know, in the city of Green Bay. Those are the beautiful, beautiful moments that you see there. Last but not least, I just want to shout this out for a moment because it was really cool. Had a cool post-game interaction. So I was, you know, heading out and all the families of the players were headed out to the field for the fireworks. And one, I won't name names here, but one of the players' dads like stops me and I'm like, oh God, what did I say about this player that the parents are going to be upset with me? And it was the exact opposite. He was super cool. He's like, hey, listen to the show. You know, we're from out of state. And we just want to let you know, like, you keep us all updated with what's going on at practice. He's like, sometimes it's really hard to tell like everything that's going on. He's like, you are, you know, telling us everything that's going on at practice and all the podcasts and everything like that. Was super appreciative. We'll see if that continues if I ever have to tweet something negative about the player. But it was just a really cool moment and just kind of reminded me too that, you know, these parents of the players are so ingrained as to what's going on, as you would as well, right? If your kid was playing for a professional team, you would be dying on every word that was said and want to know everything that's taking place. So just kind of a cool moment for me personally, just to kind of hear. And like, I always fear the worst of like, oh no, like what, you know, did I tweet something about a player? Did I say something about a player? And I hope you guys know, and I say this all the time, I want all 91 of these guys to go to the Hall of Fame as Green Bay Packers. It doesn't work out that way, unfortunately. I want every single one of these coaches to go to the Hall of Fame as Green Bay Packers coaches. It doesn't work out that way. There are going to be players this year that excel and do awesome. There are going to be players that don't do well. And unfortunately, I have to talk about that as well. And I try to do it in the least dickish way possible and try to be respectful about it. And, you know, like AJ Dillon, Quay Walker, these are guys that I've talked about in the past that I thought like last year that Dillon struggled. I thought Eric Stokes, the last 2 years has struggled. I thought, you know, there's a variety of players. We don't need to go over all of them, but I love the way Dillon's playing in practice right now. I love the way Eric Stokes is playing in practice right now. So, I mean, that's part of the gig, right? You have to talk about the good. You have to talk about the bad. But I always try to do it in a respectful way, but you never know what sort of interaction you're going to get. But it was just a really cool one from that particular parent. Practice this week. Nothing on Sunday, nothing on Monday. Tuesday and Wednesday are open training camp practices. Thursday is a training camp practice open to the media only. Off day on Friday, preseason game number one on Saturday. Going to be here before you know it. That's going to do it for me today. Shout out to our Hall of Fame and All-Pro members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Shea Brad Dad, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Dan Miller, Alex Wong, Arnaldo Espinoza, Peter Rataka, Caleb Cookster, SoCal Pack, and Dan Guestford. I will see you guys right back here tomorrow. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.